It's 8:04 and you're listening to KBOO Radio. This is Wednesday Morning Talk Radio and I'm your host, Lisa Loving. Today we're looking at the economy and domestic violence. Do you think the economy is fueling a rise in violence within families? And why? Our guest is Kelsey Pine. She's with the Portland Women's Crisis Line. Thanks for being here this morning.
Thank you for having me.
And you have an important event coming up tomorrow night. Can you talk about it a little?
Yes, we do. We have what we're calling the Community Healing Vigil. Last year on December 4th, we held a vigil after a string of murder suicides has been happening in the community, spurred by domestic violence within the home. And we planned this vigil last year just because the community really needed to come together and talk about what was happening and have a space for healing. And unfortunately, what we saw was that these murder-suicides continued throughout 2010. So we are holding another vigil tomorrow night, Thursday, October 28th. It's going to be at the Holiday Park. It's the park right across from Lloyd Center at 13th and Northeast Holiday. And it's going to be from 6 to 8 p.m. So we're going to have a candlelit vigil. We're going to be reading the victims' names from the last year. We'll have families and loved ones of the people who have died joining us. And we'll also have a community speak out. So people are welcome to come and talk about how domestic violence is impacting them in the community or what they think we should be doing about it. And they'll really have a platform to speak out and kind of start to heal from the violence that we've been sustaining over the year.
Now, I remember last December when a spate of I feel as though it was all of it was men who killed their wives. In some instances, I feel as though they may have attacked their kids and then committed suicide. Mm-hmm. And also, you know, you had mentioned domestic violence in the home, but also last year there was a case of a mom who threw her two kids over a bridge into the Willamette River and one of the kids died. So when we look at domestic violence and how it's playing out, it's not always in the home. And sometimes it's even in the workplace or someplace in public like that.
Right.
You know, probably a lot of KBOO listeners, longtime listeners, are familiar with the work of the Portland Women's Crisis Line. Mm-hmm. But can you talk a little bit, just for people that don't know, talk about how you work, who staffs your lines, what are your hours?
Definitely. We are an organization that was founded here in Portland in 1972. So we're coming up on our 40th birthday, which is great that we've been around so long, but also terrible that we've had to be around so long and continue to need to be around. We are a 24-hour domestic and sexual violence resource agency. So what we do is we answer a 24-hour crisis line. And on that crisis line, we provide resources and support for people who are experiencing domestic violence, as well as those who love them that need to call and find resources for either the person they love or for themselves in supporting that person. And we can do a lot of things on that line. We check the domestic violence shelter space 3 times a day. So we call around to 5 different counties and check the 8 domestic violence shelters in the area so that people don't need to call those 8 shelters individually. They can just call us throughout the day and check in, and usually they're full. So shelters are really seeing that they're full all the time. They're constantly working. A few years back, we would see open spaces throughout the day and be able to refer people, but it's very infrequent throughout the day that we can refer people to open spaces. So people who are experiencing domestic violence have learned that, and they call us throughout the day just to check in on bed space. Go ahead.
Men can call too, can't they?
Oh, yes. Anyone can call. So we talk to men who either know someone that's experiencing domestic violence or experiencing it themselves. Because as you mentioned, domestic violence can look many different ways within families. So we definitely talk to people from all sorts of backgrounds. The relationships look all sorts of ways. And we also focus on sexual assault. So it's not just domestic violence that we specialize in. We also go to the hospital with people who've been sexually assaulted. So we'll go 24 hours a day. We're on call here in Multnomah County. And we have things like free support groups. We do emergency transportation so we can greyhound somebody out of town if they need a safe place to go. We have our danger to safety cab program. So we'll cab somebody to the hospital. Those kinds of things.
Wow. This is Wednesday Morning Talk Radio. Our guest this morning, Kelsey Pine with the Portland Women's Crisis Line. We're opening up the phone lines and we're just putting it out to people. I mean, this domestic violence, sexual violence, violence against women, violence against kids, violence against families. Mm-hmm. You know, we also see, like you said, this phenomenon. It plays out in lesbian communities. It plays out in gay male communities. So I don't want to put anybody in a drawer. I want to open up the phone lines and say, have you been affected by violence within your family. And do you have a sense, do you think that the economy is making it, is growing this problem? And the number to call to share your story is 503-231-8187. You know, Kelsey, here's another thing that makes me wonder, and we could talk a little bit more about specific cases in a few minutes, but I'm also curious about, to me, sexual violence and this issue of domestic violence has really been transformed in my mind over the past 5 years that we've heard the details of the Roman Catholic Church scandal with, like, tens of thousands of boys and girls too, being systematically assaulted. And it sometimes it makes me worry and wonder that, you know, I want to know that the services have grown with a realization of who is victimized in this way. I mean, can you speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, definitely. Our name is very reflective of the time that we were founded in 1972. So that's why we were called the Portland Women's Crisis Line. But we do work with anybody, no matter what, how they identify, if they're straight, gay, transgender, if they identify as queer, if it's a male who's experiencing violence at the hands of his female partner. We work with everybody, you know, as long as they call us, we can provide them resources. And of course, there's nuances to each situation. If it looks a little differently from a, you know, traditional heterosexual straight male and female violence. So, and we've tried to adapt our services in that way. So we go to continual trainings. We have newer programs like our sex industry outreach program, in which we work with people who are working in the sex industry here in Portland, to try to make it safer for them to do the work if they want to continue doing the work, or help, you know, provide them resources if they need it. Mm-hmm. So trying to adapt to the different kind of situations where we see violence happening. We also have a support group for adult survivors of childhood sexual trauma, as you're mentioning, with the kind of epidemic of priest sexual abuse. We see a lot of people who have the after effects of trauma on their adult lives. So we have this support group for them, and we have a couple different support groups for those folks.
So you've really grown over the past 10 years.
Oh, definitely. We started as a rape crisis line, and in the 80s started to see that people had the need for domestic violence services as well. So we expanded to be a dual service agency. So that's what we do.
We are talking with Kelsey Pine from the Portland Women's Crisis Line. The Women's Crisis Line is having a big event tomorrow night. It's a vigil for victims of domestic violence murder. And it's going to be at the Holiday Park, which is right by the Lloyd Center. It's the park outside by Lloyd Center. It's tomorrow night at 6 p.m. candlelight vigil. You know, I think that a lot of people are affected by domestic violence in their lives. Often, I think, literally because you live next to someone or you work with someone who's living through it, and you look at that and you don't know what to do. Anyway, if you're out there and you're listening to this show right now, we would love to hear your story about that. The number to call is 503-231-8187. In my family, I come from a military family. And it makes me wonder, when I've looked at this blossoming of cases over the past couple of years. And by the way, I mean, in the daily newspaper, you don't even get a sense at all of how many cases there are that the police investigate. So last December, when there was this spate of murders, there was a big press conference at the Northeast Precinct, and it had came together people who were advocates, nonprofit organizations, and a couple of women who were lieutenants from the Portland Police Department who worked in the domestic violence division, and they said thousands and thousands and thousands of cases they investigate, and that they beg more people to try to intervene, and even if it means calling the police. And that's a complicated thing to do, really, because it can blow up on you, too.
It can blow up on you, and it can also blow up on the survivor if what happens is the police go to the home and nothing happens. If nobody reports any violence in the home, it could make the violence worse after the police leave. So it is really a complicated issue, and I think people worry about getting involved because they see it as a private issue that happens within families. And what's really important is that we start talking about this as a community and perhaps what's happening in our community to perpetuate this violence. So is it our silence when we see those news stories and don't wonder, when we see a murder or suicide and don't wonder that was domestic violence. That's one of the things that's been really hard in counting the numbers of people that died this year, is that they aren't always called domestic violence in the news. They're called, you know, suspicious deaths or murder suicides. And people don't identify it right on the surface as domestic violence. So it took a lot of combing through these news stories to figure out, you know, what were the factors that made it seem like domestic violence. If you're being murdered by your partner, we would call that domestic violence at the Portland Women's Crisis Line. So that's how we've defined it.
Mm. And we do have a caller. The number to call is 503-231-8187. And John Doe is on the line. John, what's going on with you?
So I just wanted to make reference to another great resource here in Portland, and it's the Men's and Women's Resource Center. It's off of 13th or 14th and Burnside. I was an offender a couple years ago in a domestic violence incident, and they gave me the counseling that has helped me get my head screwed on straight and get my life turned around.
Wow, John, that's fantastic. Can you talk a little bit more about that? I mean, what was the process for you?
Well, they have a one-year-long program specifically designed around men, but they also do counseling for gays, for lesbians, for not just for heterosexuals. The year-long program requires some group therapy on a weekly basis. In most cases, as it was in mine, it's court-mandated as part of the sentence for the crime that I committed.
Mm.
So that year-long program, you have to participate, and there's some really strict guidelines around that. And if you don't participate, I mean, they're on you. So,
John, can I ask you another question? What was the turning point for you? Was there some kind of realization, or you know, that you needed to that triggered you changing your behavior, or was there a lot of pressure on you, or something that you felt like led to, you know, dangerous behavior? What was the turning point for you?
It was just learning to my victim.
Well, your phone is cracking up. Can you say that just one more time?
Learning to have some empathy towards my victim. When the incident occurred, I was pretty narcissistic, and the world revolved around me, and I really didn't see or consider how she felt. And so, not a place I want to go back to.
Okay. Wow.
As far as down that rabbit hole.
Well, John, I just really appreciate your calling. Congratulations, and thanks a lot for sharing that.
Sure.
Have a great day.
Bye-bye.
That was cool. I don't know if I've ever heard a story like that. I guess, again, there's so much about this issue that is so hidden.
Right.
And you kind of assume that there's issues that can never be solved. And so John referenced portlandmrc.com. Mm-hmm. And thanks to our magical engineering pixie for running that web address into the air room. This is Wednesday Morning Talk Radio. I'm your host, Lisa Loving. We're live in the studio with Kelsey Pine from the Portland Women's Crisis Line. We're looking at these issues of domestic violence. It looks like the incidents of murder and domestic violence are climbing in our community over the past couple of years. And tomorrow, the Crisis Line is having a vigil for victims of domestic violence murder at Holiday Park by Lloyd Center. It starts at 6 p.m. And this, Kelsey, this is the second vigil that you've had in
recent years, yes.
In 14 months.
Yeah. So it's the second one we had. And really, it's because we see these numbers continually in the news. And people aren't, like I said, it's not always identified as domestic violence, but the community knows when it is domestic violence. The friends and family of these victims know when it's been domestic violence. So it's really important for us to come together and, as an agency, you know, provide them the space to be able to talk about those people that they love, that they lost. That's one of our goals, is that we can use the space to remember those people, as well as offer a space for healing as a community.
Mm. And the number to call to participate in this discussion is 503-231-8187. And we have Jennifer Doe on the line. Jennifer, what's going on?
Hi, can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
Oh, great. I was calling because I wanted to know what type of funding, where does the funding come? Is it all from private donors, or is there like any state funding that goes to support this?
Yeah, that's a great question, Jennifer.
I have one other question that I'm going to take my answer off the air.
Okay.
My other question is, with the domestic violence grants that some people are able to access through DHS, mm-hmm. how come the Women's Crisis Line doesn't kind of oversee that or disperse that?
Interesting, okay. Jennifer.
Very good question.
Jennifer, thanks
Thank
a lot
you.
For calling. You know, the Women's Crisis Line traditionally is super duper quadruper grass rooty.
Yes.
Like you're very close to the ground over there.
Yeah. We have a small staff. So the first question was, what does our funding look like? So we have a mix of funding. One is government contracts we've had for a long time. So we get funding from different government agencies that we apply to, either state or county funding.
Like which ones? Like DHS?
DHS, okay. Yeah, State of Oregon funding. We also have foundation funding, so private foundations, family foundations, trusts, those kinds of things. And we also have individual donors. So our funding is kind of a mishmash of those things. And what we've seen over the last couple of years with the economy is that it's affected the services quite a bit, and that our individual donors... We have more individual donors because we've been doing a lot of work to get more people involved in the work that we do, but they're giving less money each. So our larger donors are giving less money than they traditionally have. Private foundations are seeing less income, so they're giving less money. And government contracts are being cut as well. So we're expecting another government decrease in funding in the next biennium. So the funding has really impacted us as an agency. We've reduced our staff quite a bit in the last year. And it's the same for other organizations around the area, for sure. And then the other question that she had was about a domestic violence grant. So I want to be a little informative about that because some people don't really know what that is. So DHS, if you go to a DHS self-sufficiency office, people can apply for what's called a domestic violence grant. And I think it's specifically called Temporary Assistance for Domestic Violence Survivors. And it's a one-time grant to use towards safety needs. So it could be to put a down payment on an apartment, rent, those kinds of things. And it's a small amount of money, really, relatively, if you're looking at starting a new life. It's, I think, about $1,000 to put towards housing. And it's only for women or people with children, so survivors with children who are experiencing domestic violence. So single people cannot access this grant, but we do refer to it to DHS. And we don't oversee that process because it is run by DHS and we're a nonprofit agency that's not a government agency. So we do refer to it and help people look for those resources.
You know, and this is a slightly separate topic, but one of these days I got to do a show about the DHS because they work in mysterious ways. And that is one of the biggest government agencies in the state. And they save lives and they're like the goddess Callie. Mm-hmm. They're the bringer of life and they are the destroyer. And that place is just mysterious. I'm just putting that out. And this is Wednesday Morning Talk Radio. I'm your host, Lisa Loving. We are with Kelsey Pine of the Women's Crisis Line. Big event tomorrow night. At the end of this show, we'll give you the 24-hour crisis line phone number and we'll keep it by the front desk for people that want to get that number. But I think that we do have another caller. Oh, okay. That caller wiggled away. We're putting this out to people. Do you think the economy is fueling a rise in violence within families in our community? And why would it be so? The number to call to participate in our discussion here is 503-231-8187. One of the things that strikes me about some of these issues around domestic violence, intrafamily violence, there's also issues around, you know, teenage girls and violence, dating violence, mm-hmm. too, which I think is part of this, too. And I'm not sure who reaches out to the girls and the boys trying to teach them about this stuff. But sometimes I wonder also if, you know, there's going to be a discussion about bullying behavior on KBOO later. You know, at what point does the bullying behavior also kind of play into this? And sometimes I wonder about the war. I started to bring this topic up earlier in this hour. I come from a military family, mm-hmm. and it makes me wonder if this ongoing war also has an impact on murder, like murder rates among intrafamilies. I know that actually has happened several times in Washington State. I'm not sure, maybe just once or twice here in Oregon over the past 10 years. But you know, how do we drill down, Kelsey, into this issue of what drives the violence, perceived rises and falls in violence? Because it's hard to even track that.
Right. It is hard to track. And we do know that there have been more deaths. So I do think that the economy is perhaps one of the factors that's causing these lethal domestic violence situations. But what we're seeing as organizations is that it's not fueling abusive behavior. People who are abusive are becoming more lethal with their behavior as the economy's gotten worse. And that's for a number of reasons. One of them is that survivors have a harder time leaving the home because there's no resources at the organizations that they're accessing. So shelter beds are full. Housing resources for long-term housing are much more strapped. So people are staying longer than they might have normally because there aren't the financial resources to get out. And, you know, that's just one of the many factors in the economy that's really feeling it. But just as we know that the economy isn't causing alcoholism, people who, you know, or drug abuse, people who maybe are predisposed to that or have those behaviors, it may become worse with the economy because of the stress that they're under financially, but it's not causing those behaviors. So we are seeing that there maybe was some a mental or emotional abuse happening before and it's turned violent physically because of the economy and people just can't get out of the home.
Turns up the heat, makes it worse.
Right.
Okay, and the number to call, 503-231-8187. We have a couple callers. Joanne, what is your take on this, Joanne?
Yeah, hello, Lisa and everybody else. I was going to talk about my ongoing long-term experience with my family, but I'm not. You know, this is an age-old problem. Generations of this has been going on all over the world, and governments and that have done very little about it. And it's just an accepted way of life in the world. And this program is infuriating me, like other programs that talk about domestic violence, because you trivialize the importance and seriousness of this problem in this country and in the world. And it's not going away. And so I'm so infuriated. In fact, the first time I just hung up, I figured, what's the use? You know, I'm not going to reach people, and they're going to put me out to be a certain way. So that's all I have to say, Lisa. Goodbye.
Okay. All right. Thanks a lot, Joanne. Joanne always raises important points, and I want to come back to what she's saying about how easy it is to trivialize this issue, because it is going on all over the world. It is a form of social control. Right. You know, in the big picture. But do we have another caller? We have Henrietta on the line. What's your take, Henrietta?
I'm sorry, I'm sick right now, so I don't know whether I am clear enough. But I want to say that very often that economic situation influences also domestic violence in the way that people who are kind of charity people want to give a home or shelter to people who are in need. They are very often have their own insecurities, despite being wealthy, and they mistreat or abuse very often only in passive aggressive way, but influencing mental well-being of those victims also. So it's very important that people who help, not through the agencies but privately, that they should have learned about that such behavior is not all right. It's one of the topics I would like to mention. Right now, I'm simply I just got a virus or something, and I cannot think clearly, but this is something what I wanted to mention as one of the things.
Thanks a lot, Henrietta. Thanks for calling. Do you want to address that?
Sure. What I hear Henrietta was saying was that she feels like that people who are privately offering housing to those who are homeless may be abusive. And that's what I'm hearing. I'm not sure that that's what you
took
from
that. That's an interest. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm sure that that happens a lot with landlord-tenant abuse. So that is an issue that's definitely important. But most specifically, the domestic violence that we're looking at is violence within a relationship. So between a boyfriend and girlfriend, or two partners, or husband and wife, and among parents to their children, because we have seen a lot of children who lost their lives in the recent year. So I definitely think that all the violence is connected. This oppression and this worldwide violence that Joanne had mentioned is definitely connected, and it's hard to kind of sift out what's most important. But what we are seeing in our community is that this rise in domestic violence murders has been happening over the last year. And that's not to say that it wasn't happening before this year. It's that we're seeing all these murders in a cluster, so people are starting to pay attention, which is why it's great that we're you know, getting on radio shows like this to be able to talk about it, because before it was harder for people to pay attention to because they weren't seeing it in the newspaper every day.
And the other thing that strikes me about Joanne's bigger point, when you look at violence against women in general, violence against families, mm-hmm. as an ancient, I'm sure that cave person society was based on this as well. I mean, it's ancient. And, you know, is it a factor of the human condition or something like that? And it makes me, you know, that's part of the issue, I think, traditionally with the crisis line, that's been difficult for the crisis line to deal with over these past almost 40 years, because I think some people look at the work that you're doing and they're just like, no, this is futile. But sometimes I think that even though you can't save the world, at least you can help save individual people's worlds. Right. And I bet you actually have some kind of support group or services that Joanne could access as a long-term survivor. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, definitely. We don't have any domestic violence support groups currently at our agency, but we do. It sounds like she experienced it within her family. So if she was, if there was any childhood sexual trauma, we do have those support groups, and then we refer to other support groups. So if we don't offer them, we will refer on our crisis line. And I do want to say the crisis line in case anybody wants to call.
Okay, go ahead and give the crisis line number.
It is 503-235-5333.
Is the crisis line staffed by volunteers?
Some, yes. We do have one staff person who's on all the time, and it's a 24-hour line, and then we have volunteers who come in and help out. And we do miss some calls because we've been so busy. We answer about 2,000 calls a month.
Wow. Okay, this is Wednesday Morning Talk Radio. I'm your host, Lisa Loving. Our guest, Kelsey Pine with the Portland Women's Crisis Line. The Crisis Line is holding a vigil tomorrow night at Holiday Park. A vigil for victims of domestic violence murder. It's a candlelight vigil tomorrow night, starting at 6 p.m. It's at Holiday Park, right by the Lloyd Center MAC station. We are having a conversation right now about this issue of what is driving the rise in domestic violence murders in our local community. And it is kind of a complicated issue. But we're tossing that out there. You know, what about the economy? Is that what it is? And the number to call to participate in our conversation is 503-231-8187. And do you think that Joanne is right? Do you think that conversations like this trivialize this issue? Because this is a huge issue. And we do have another caller. Leah's on the line. What's going on with you, Leah?
Good morning. Okay, I'm a counselor, recovery person and trauma specialist by background. I'm a survivor as well, and I run into domestic violence all the time. There's a couple things. First of all is the denial, the shame and denial that goes with this. And I'm sure as counselors, you guys have to deal with this all the time in trying to get a woman to understand that she is in danger and she is needing help and that the person who's abusing her does not have her best interests at heart. The other thing is, yes, there is no question, and the statistics prove it. We've checked out times in our history when we had economic upheavals, and there was always a corresponding response to abuse in the family, whether it was with children or wives or whatever. It was just there. The other thing is, I'm going to disagree with the statement that Joanne made that this is an ancient thing. It is ancient in the fact that it goes back to the beginnings of patriarchy. But prior to that, women were revered. And if you look at the old goddess religions and the Willendorf goddess, there was a recognition among our ancient ancestors that we carried life, and without us, there was no life. Therefore, you don't mistreat the women and your children. You hold on to them, because if you don't, you disappear. The earth goes on, but there's no more humans. Mm. And we need to come back to that. I think not just locally, you know, here, but as a global thing. We're killing women and children all over the world. The other thing is, I would like to reference a book by Bell Hooks called Gender Issues that she wrote about men, sex, and love. And for my money, it's the best book out there. A lot of people who are working in trauma, especially with veterans, are using this book. It addresses the gender issue and focuses on the males and what we do to our little boys and how we disconnect them from their feelings and their heart, and how we, and that feeds the war machine. Just, we feed them in there like fodder. We have a cultural across our world issue that we have to deal with if we're going to survive. So thank you.
Thanks a lot, Leah. Thanks for calling. A bunch of interesting issues brought up by Leah there. And the number to call, 503-231-8187. You know what is so interesting to me, Kelsey, since we're talking about violence, we're talking about sexual violence, the war. I will always come back to the war. This issue of sort of by default, women have for the past several years been allowed to participate in combat roles in Iraq and Afghanistan. And the shock of realizations that these women soldiers who are warriors are also just major victims of sexual assault. And at the same time, the whole don't ask, don't tell thing, the whole ban of homosexual people serving in the military, which ostensibly was for that reason, that there was this crazy theory that if gay people were in the military, they would rape people. But in fact, it's the opposite is true. I mean, can you just briefly speak to that?
Right. And I think what we're seeing is that women and people who are gay or lesbian or bisexual or transsexual are experiencing this oppression within the military system, because the military system is one of our institutional systems that we've set up that has really, you know, kind of eaten up and kind of perpetuates the violence that we're seeing against people who are gay, lesbian, bi, and transsexual, against women. We see sexism. So you can let people in, but until you address the root issues of patriarchy, as Henrietta mentioned, and of oppression, and our, I mean, it's in everything we see. It's in our media, it's in our communities, it's in our schools. We've seen with bullying that these kind of violent behaviors are really bred from a young age. So it's going to take a lot of prevention to make a big difference in this issue.
You know, speaking as the mom of a 19-year-old male human being, I mean, from his earliest ages, you know, and even in preschool and early elementary school, it shocked me to see the level of violence that young male children are expected to put up with. And as people pushed him around years ago, always from the school, always from the other parents, it was the same. He has to learn to defend himself. And I remember him being in elementary school and looking at me and saying, but mama, who's going to teach the other kids peace, right? Mm-hmm. Anyway, the number to call, 503-231-8187. And we've got a caller. The caller's name is Shara. Shara, you're on the line. What's going on, Shara?
Well, in listening to you guys talk about this, I just am thinking about, you know, so many different factors that contribute to violence in the home. And I certainly think that the economic situation contributes to it. I mean, we talked about the stress and kind of having that exacerbating someone's already potential to be violent, perhaps. But I think about coping and, you know, people's lack of ability to cope with situations. I think about undiagnosed mental disorders. I think about lack of support. You know, I think that in our society today and in our culture, I mean, we're raising children as single parents, as two-parent households, and not as families with aunts and uncles and grandparents. And I think that the stress and the pressure from that, you know, that we inevitably are projecting that on the people around us. And, you know, I just think about my own relationship and that, you know, the person that I love the most, I probably treat him worse than anybody else in my entire life. I probably treat the person at the store better than him sometimes, you know, and it's just interesting, you know, to think about, you know, what we decide is acceptable, you know, in our relationships and how it kind of come to be that way.
Thanks a lot for calling, Chara. And we do have another caller. Oh, Henrietta's back. Henrietta, did we get your comments straight or did we maybe misunderstand them? Tell us again what your point is, Henrietta.
I have another question.
Okay.
Thought. Nothing new. I think that economic situation also, whether it is bad or good, because of that wealth distribution, social economic inequity, or how you call it in English, I'm maybe not very precise. But the thing is that what you do, Americans, I'm I live here, but I'm permanently here. But you teach abroad in Europe how to legal system, people, justice system, judges, lawyers. You teach them about that situation, domestic violence. But what happens in America, the judges know that, and I would say they try to be as just as possible. But if the paid lawyers are only looking for the money, and the money usually comes and decides who gets away from abuse, is not responsible for abuse because they can afford abusers, well paid, not always, but there are situations like that. Well-paid lawyers, and the victim usually is stripped of money in advance or doesn't have her or whatever it is. Sometimes it is vice versa, his part. I think it's very important to do something in the justice system and not reward lawyers for being good lawyers and defending or winning cases for practically abusers.
That's a really interesting point, Henrietta. And I, you know, it reminds me of what's going on with Mel Gibson right now. Remember the whole Mel Gibson thing? Mm-hmm. Thanks for calling, Henrietta. Mel Gibson, man, and his partner has recordings of the wild, abusive things mm-hmm. he said on the phone. And when you watch that play out in public, you sit there and think about the attorneys and how mm-hmm. the attorneys are going to pull out carving knives. And it just does seem like about money. It's just weird. Right. I mean, and what do you have a sense, Kelsey, about the role that the attorneys play in these kind of cases?
Yeah, I definitely think that the justice system is another complicated system for survivors to navigate, in that if your abuser has all of your financial resources, he has the resources to hire an attorney, whereas you may have to, you know, get a free attorney or somebody on a sliding scale. So that's definitely one of the barriers people face in the justice system. And that's one of the issues we really work with survivors, is the issue of financial abuse, because that's one of the major reasons is people can't leave because they don't have the resources to get a safe place. If they had a safe place, they might be able to go there instead of staying in the home and kind of sustaining this level of violence that they've been sustaining. Mm-hmm. So it's not as pure and simple as people don't understand, and they do love their abuser. Their abusers are very good. That's why abusers are so good at what they do, and why it's so prevalent, is they're very good at this cycle of violence, of abusing, and then, you know, this kind of fake guilt of, I'm so sorry, I'll never do it again. And then it just continues to happen. So there is that factor, but there's also these kind of factors within the justice system, within, you know, unemployment and all these issues that really impact survivors. So they're not only experiencing abuse at the hands of someone they love the most, but they're also not able to leave because they can't get a job, or they can't get a lawyer, or there's no shelter available. So it's really, if you think about domestic violence, it's trying to expand your view beyond, what is she thinking? Why isn't she leaving? Because it really is an incredibly complicated issue. And that's why we're there at the crisis line, because there's so many systems that people need to access to get safe.
So someone can be victimized by the abuse, but then they realize that if they try to step out of their household to escape, they're abused again at the hands of the system, basically.
Right, right. And what we also know is that when somebody tries to leave, that's when violence becomes the most lethal.
Right.
So that's one of the major factors that I think we're seeing with these murders, is that people maybe had tried to leave. We hear a lot in these news stories of people being murdered about how they had applied for a restraining order. Right. So there are these circumstances where we see that people tried to leave, but they probably didn't have the resources that they needed to get safe. So the violence got even worse, and it's beyond their control.
And this is Wednesday Morning Talk Radio. I'm your host, Lisa Loving. We're live in the studio with Kelsey Pine from the Portland Women's Crisis Line. And we have John on the phone. John, what do you think? What's going on?
So I called earlier, and I just wanted to add a couple more things if I could.
Great.
The abuse really is about control. And it starts with little things in the beginning and then continually escalates. It stair steps up as time goes on. And so for the victims out there that are experiencing these control issues, being controlled by their partner, get some help, get some counseling, call the the Women's Crisis Line or the Men's Resource Center, the Women's Resource Center, get some therapy, get some help to get out of that, or to get the abuser to stop and to see that these controlling behaviors are escalating and are getting worse.
Okay. All right, John. John, I mean, I just think it's so exciting that you're calling and you're sharing this story, because I have a feeling that I don't think I realized before that people were out there getting services and changing and improving their life situation. So that's why I'm so excited that you're calling, because
it's not an overnight change.
It
takes months and years of work, and it is work. Of changing behaviors.
And you know, when we're talking about these family dynamics, when we're talking about people who do love each other, it's not going to be possible to for a spouse to talk her abusive spouse or his abusive spouse into going and getting counseling with you. It came down to a court mandated thing.
It escalated, and then I got arrested.
Okay.
Because I wasn't aware of it, but I couldn't stop myself from going down that hole at that point in time.
Wow. Okay.
And again, the coulda, woulda, shoulda, the I wish I knew then what I know now. And the education piece is just huge. You get in these programs that the abuser gets in these programs about learning the many, many, many different forms of abuse. Things that I had never ever considered as being abusive in the past, and that's part of that social cultural thing. A lot of these things are values and beliefs that I have had since early childhood that were handed down to me from my father.
Like what? Can you name some?
Oh, just the man rules the roost, and what I say goes, and really discounting the value. In my case, of my partner, of a woman, and that we are equals, and not that I am one up or better than.
Okay.
And I think that those kinds of belief systems permeate our society.
Yeah, all over the world too.
Yeah,
as Joanne said.
Yeah,
and it's unfortunate. So unfortunate.
John, you bring up something really important that I just want to point out that you said, is that the violence doesn't start with being punched in the face on the first date. And so that's something that a lot of people don't understand. It's this kind of insidious behavior. So it may be a feeling of your partner's protective over you, and they get jealous when you're out with your male friends or your female friends. And it starts really as simple as that. So these behaviors may be on the surface at the very beginning,
but
by
there's
themselves.
A spectrum.
Yes, it's a continuation, a cycle of violence. And so it starts with that control, and then it starts to be, you have to tell me when you're going to the store, you have to call me when you get to work. And it just kind of rolls into this bigger issue, as John was saying. So I think it's really important that people understand that it's not as simple as on the first date you say, oh, this guy's an abuser. I mean, some people out there may be that easy to point out, but most abusers, you know, on the surface seem very loving and protective, and they do say they're sorry, and they do say that it'll never happen again. And so when you love somebody, especially women, I think we're socialized to, you know, accept and try to make someone better and try to help improve their situation. So we see this cycle just continue to keep going.
All right. Thanks a lot, John. Thanks so much for calling. Really appreciate your comments.
Thank you, John.
Thank you.
And I have to say, coming up this morning on KBOO at 9, host Michelle Schroeder Fletcher interviews Jefferson Cowie, author of Stayin' Alive, the 1970s and the Last Days of the Working Class, about what happened to working people in the last Great Recession. At 9:30, host Jacob Rosenblum interviews Israeli columnist and commentator Bradley Burstyn, a columnist for Israel's Haaretz newspaper. At 10, Eric Cascadia is off today on Flashpoints, Jesselyn Raddick, of the Government Accountability Project, talks about whistleblowers and speaking truth to power. And we hear excerpts from the recent WikiLeaks press conference, the leaks of government documents about the Iraq war, and talk about a body count, talk about violence against women and children there. At 11 on the Recovery Zone, Stephanie Potter hosts David Abram, ecologist, environmental philosopher, and director of Alliance for Wild Ethics. His new book is Becoming Animal in Earthly Cosmology. This is Wednesday Morning Talk Radio. I'm your host, Lisa Loving. We're live in the studio with Kelsey Pine of the Portland Women's Crisis Line. Tomorrow night at Holiday Park, from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m., The crisis line is holding a vigil for victims of domestic violence murder. And that's at Holiday Park, which is right by the MAC station at the Lloyd Center. And, you know, I have to say, Holiday Park is considered to be a hot spot. That MAC station is considered to be a hot spot, one of several hot spots for gang activity. But when we're talking about domestic violence murders in the Portland area, there have been exponentially more DV murders here than gang shooting related deaths. We're saying 53 lives have been lost just in this year so far due to the epidemic of domestic violence, murder-suicide. Between November 2009 and October 2010, 71 people, including victims and abusers. And Kelsey, there's a sense that when the holiday times roll around, it intensifies as well.
Yeah, that can definitely intensify violence in that the dynamics in the relationship. Holidays can be more stressful on families, and there can be more control over finances during a time when people are spending more money on presents and gifts and, you know, vacations and trips. And so that can really just amplify the violence that's already happening.
Plus alcohol use and drug use, too.
Yeah, potentially, which doesn't cause domestic violence, but it can, again, exasperate it. We also see a rise in domestic violence calls to our agency in the late summer months. So there's a lot of speculation about, you know, what is that? Is it the hot weather? Is it the people are just irritable because of the hot weather? And we don't really know, but we do know that, you know, August, September are usually our busiest months on the crisis line. We got over 2,000 calls, I think, in September.
Wow. And the number to call to participate in this conversation is 503-231-8187. And we do have a caller. And Henrietta's back. What's your take, Henrietta?
I would like to say that it happens very often among highly educated people, and legal system is somehow swayed or manipulated by them, because they usually, it's true what that caller said about isolation. Isolation is very typical, but the abusers are... they manipulate not only the victim, they manipulate the system, that support system that is available for the abused person, and victims are so traumatized that they
We're losing your phone, Henrietta, but thanks for calling. We're following your train of thought. Looking at, as Kelsey had said earlier, you know, there's the physical abuse, there's the family abuse, and then there's the financial abuse and the abuse of the system. You know, Kelsey, there's another part of this. You guys at the Crisis Line, you have a 3-point plan for how people can participate and try to address domestic violence. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, definitely. We have 3 things that people can do within our community to make a difference with people who are experiencing domestic violence. And so I'm speaking specifically right now to people who maybe work with someone who they think is experiencing domestic violence, or maybe it's their neighbor, their sister, their mother, somebody that they know. And the first thing that we say is really simple. It's just be quiet and listen. So if somebody starts to tell you about abuse they're experiencing at home, just to be quiet. And the next thing you can do is just tell them that you believe them and that they don't deserve that abuse. The second thing we ask people to do is to speak out. So interrupt jokes about domestic violence. You know, write the editor if there's a news story that's really misleading about domestic violence, or write the editor if there's a great story that's really saying important things about domestic violence. And also, you know, contact your legislature when there's bills that need to be passed that will help the services. Another thing we ask people to do, our last thing, is to get active. So as simple as following local organizations like the Crisis Line, get on Facebook and follow them, go to their website, sign up for their email newsletter, and just find out what's going on with domestic violence in the community, because you see these spurts in the news about these murders, but it's happening all the time. Like I said, we get about 2,000 calls a month, regardless of how many murders there are. So it's just a continual thing that goes on. So keep up to date with them. You can also volunteer at organizations like the Crisis Line and get involved that way. You can attend events like the vigil that's coming up tomorrow night. You can come to our fundraising events. You can donate your resources. One of the big things we do need is community support. So whether you have $5 or $100 to give, we need your support regardless. A Crisis Line call costs us about $7 a piece. So even if you can give $7, you're funding one of those Crisis Line calls.
Okay, so we do have another caller. Annalisa's on the phone. Annalisa, what do you think about this issue?
Well, I like to say that abuse does not necessarily have to be a physical. It is a slow process, and it starts real slow, and name-calling, withheld of support, both emotional and financial support, or when you have an when you have an illness, when you get sick from stress, you know, that's when abuse slowly starts happening. And the worst thing is that it happens behind closed doors, and the outside world, a person can be the best person in the outside world, and they will not believe that it is possible that this person can be extremely emotionally abusive. And I think that is the hardest thing to prove and to make other people believe, because the person is in the outside world is very, very, very well-liked. And these things happen behind closed doors, and that is, I think, one of the hardest things to prove. So, but thank you for the program.
Thanks, Annalisa. A lot of times it happens behind closed doors, but I think that many of us have had the experience of being at the grocery store or being at the bus stop and watching a mom scream at a toddler or something and backhand them, you know. I'm one of those interveners because I just can't live like that. And I can't tell you how many times. I remember one time, a boy, an elementary school boy, and his younger sister, and he smacked her in the face on the street. And then I stood there and told them to stop it, and then they both turned around and yelled at me to mind my own business and stuff like that. You know, it's interesting, Kelsey, what I hear you saying about, you know, the 3-point ways to give and get help around the issue of domestic violence. Speak up when you hear of abuse or when you see domestic violence in the media or when you hear people tell jokes. That seems like the most primary way to begin to intervene if we're talking about this being a spectrum.
Right. And it's something that all of us can do, but it does take a bit of education, because you don't want to be, nobody wants to kind of be the downer at the party if there's a joke being made. So it's really learning a finesse to interrupting those kinds of jokes and learning how to do it in a way that doesn't, you know, end relationships or make relationships or parties awkward. So it does take some finesse. And so I want to say it is a simple way, but it also takes a lot of work and a lot of thought, because I have also, I've seen domestic violence happening at a Max stop. I saw a partner hitting his girlfriend. So, and in that instance, I didn't call the police, but what I did do is I told her, you know, you didn't deserve that when he had walked away, and that you can get help if you need it. And so it's as simple as maybe telling people the crisis line number or referring them to the website, which is pwcl.org.
Okay. And we are closing out this show. So I wonder, Kelsey, if you could one more time tell our listeners what kind of services they can get at the Women's Crisis Line and how people can be active and support the work that you do.
Sure. We're a 24-hour resource for domestic and sexual violence survivors. We have a 24-hour crisis line at 503-235-5333. So you can call and speak to our advocates and get the kind of resources and support that you're needing. And then I just want to send out a reminder that there is a community healing vigil for the domestic violence victims of homicide this last year, tomorrow night at 6 p.m. at Holiday Park.
And John Doe also called in earlier talking about the Men's Resource Center, and that's PortlandMRC.com. Kelsey, thank you so much for coming and being on the air today.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate this opportunity.
You know, we can't always save the world, but if we can help save individuals, people's worlds, that can be worthwhile as well.
I agree.
So thanks for tuning into KBOO, and stay tuned for Michelle Schroeder-Fletcher.